Welcome back to the Green Front. I am your host, Betsy Rosenberg, and I am bringing back to the Green Front program Peter Joseph. He was on very recently, just about, I don't know, 3 weeks ago or so, but he is on fire with his slideshow presentation, which he started with Al Gore's training, and he's gone on to really incorporate the latest, greatest slides. I haven't done that, so he is touring around the country, and yesterday he spoke to the Marin Environmental Forum, and I was asked to, I'm a graduate of that program, was asked to come back and hear Peter's latest version, and I went because he's always got the very latest information and statistics and mostly inspiration and really good at connecting the dots and doing it in plain English. And because he is an emergency room doctor, he just has so many great metaphors for, you know, just emergency situations and how the patient is in trouble big time. And it's, what do you call it, code? What's the code, Peter? Code green.
Code blue.
Code blue for emergency. So first of all, I want to talk about a couple things, some new statistics you gave in your talk yesterday, but also did you happen to see Lawrence O'Donnell's brilliant commentary on Newt Gingrich's soon-to-be famous flip-flop? He's now calling his commercial that he shot under the Climate Reality Project. Back then it was the Alliance for Climate Protection, Al Gore's group, with, how could you forget, Newt Gingrich sitting on a bench with Nancy Pelosi, I think on the beach somewhere with the tide rising behind them, sea rising behind them, saying that they may be politically, you know, opponent, difference, have their political differences as political opponents, but on climate change they speak with one voice or something to that effect. He's now calling that ad and saying that one of the biggest mistakes he's ever made. I think him saying that is going to turn out to be one of the biggest mistakes he's ever made, at least if those of us in the climate community can make it big enough to think about just how what a big flip-flopper he is on such an important topic. And, you know, you can't really know what you know about climate change and then unknow it. It's just one of those things you can't, you know, change your mind about, not with 98% of the world's climate scientists saying it's real and it's urgent.
Yeah, well, I've always resented the term flip-flop. It's obviously a political term, because people do have the right to change their minds as they grow, and with experience we've all done that, so people can change their minds about issues. But for Gingrich to sit on a sofa with Nancy Pelosi, an apparent believer in the science of climate change, and then a few years later turn around on that, it's more than a flip-flop. I mean, the science only gets stronger.
Was that a sofa? Okay, I thought
day.
It was a beach bench. That must have been. They did a series of commercials like that, so it must have been another one. But regardless of what they were sitting on, what strikes you about his saying this? Obviously, it's politically expedient, as he believes it, but how could it backfire, Peter?
Well, what he said in response to Bill O'Reilly's question about whether human air pollution, namely the CO2 we're dumping into the atmosphere, equivalent of over 8,000 Hummers every day in weight, could be responsible for the weird climate that we're seeing. His response was, I don't really know. And he said, I don't really know, and I'm not willing to let some computer program tell me that we need to start spending trillions of dollars to stop doing what I'm doing. Now, that is exactly what Mitt Romney said in early October. So it looks to me like he's sort of going after Romney by sticking his head also where the sun don't shine, just like Mitt Romney did. Now, look, these are intelligent human beings. I mean, I don't think either of them are people with who suffer from low IQ. They've done very well in their lives, so they're not stupid. So obviously this is just all political theater to me. He's trying to backpedal in order to get primary votes from conservative voters who, you know, think Al Gore is Satan and scientists are eggheads and it's all a commie plot to tell people what kind of cars to drive. That's the sector that he's appealing to, because I guess those are the people who show up at the Iowa caucuses in New Hampshire Republican primaries, I guess. I don't really know, but what he's doing is clearly part of a political strategy. And what he wants is to win. He wants the nomination. So he's willing to, you know, prostitute himself over the facts in order to pander to a certain segment of the voting population for political gain. That's what it seems like to me.
I agree, but there's more subtext to it as I see it, and that is, if there was truly, you know, an environmental movement, a climate movement in this country that had the muscle that it should have, and maybe does, it just hasn't quite been coalesced enough yet, and hopefully that will change and grow over the coming year leading up to the election, he couldn't get away with that and not be hurt by it. In other words, yes, you're right, he's got this tunnel vision, he's pandering to his, you know, voters, but if there were enough Americans who really were alarmed about climate change and didn't think that they wanted a leader who not only changed his mind about it, but, you know, who didn't believe that the science was overwhelmingly clear, that would make a difference in the polling. But I don't think we're quite there yet, and what does that say about what's needed?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. In my book, if a candidate for office, whether it's dog catcher or city council or mayor or Congress or state legislature, a candidate who does not appreciate the gravity of the situation that human civilization has created for itself, that is an automatic disqualification. You know, it's a more automatic disqualification for public office than adultery, in my book, which everybody gets all excited about. I don't particularly care about that myself.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, you know, that's just a human quality. But to be a leader, a decision maker, and not appreciate what's going on in reality, in the real world of physics, chemistry, and biology on the planet that we call home, is an automatic disqualification.
And Lawrence O'Donnell, you know, connected a few dots talking about, without going into too many details, too many graphic details, Newt Gingrich supposedly, allegedly having some kind of sexual encounter in the driveway of his home with his kids nearby years ago. And this being a bigger mistake, I guess, than that, this being his having appeared with Nancy Pelosi to declare his concern about climate change being a bigger mistake than some of his infidelities and other imbroglios, personal as well as political. That says something, I think, about you know, where he's at, where the country's at. We're still not really, not enough of us or the American public really as alarmed as we should be. I guess that's my point, and I know you don't disagree with it, so that climate change should be, you know, such an important high on the agenda issue, and it's still, you know, being compared by Newt Gingrich, you know, and others with, you know, other mistakes, like small mistakes or large. It shouldn't even be put in that category to begin with.
Well, look, we live in an era where the propaganda industry, the advertising industry, is very powerful. It's highly advanced. It knows exactly how to make people want to buy something or eat something or go somewhere, or, you know, the human brain is quite well understood, and hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent to sow doubt in people's minds about the reality of climate change. It's getting harder as the climate is changing and disasters are taking place all over the world. But still, people are vulnerable. People are vulnerable to that kind of merchants of doubt. And mm-hmm. he buys right into it. I don't think he really believes what he says, which is another disqualification for office, in my opinion. But nonetheless, the situation is complicated, very complicated, politically, by the very enormous moneyed interest that the fossil fuel industry represents, and they have a tremendous amount of power. So candidates for office have to take that into account if they want to be elected.
I'm sure you read that article by Naomi Klein about capitalism versus climate change a few weeks ago in The Nation magazine, I believe it was.
I did not.
Oh, it's fabulous. I highly recommend it to anyone. It's long, but it's worth it. And basically, her premise is, she makes a very good case, the fact that the deniers, they're not stupid. They're very smart, actually. They're very, making, you know, very calculated in their, you know, spending the billions that we know they are, millions anyway, to keep the doubt there, because everything that, you know, they have interested in is threatened, and that it's not accidental. And it's not surprising that, you know, she's making that point, but she really connects so many dots that you realize, you know, for us to call them, as you're not doing, calling them, you know, short-sighted or stupid or somehow, you know, immature, it's not that at all. They're actually very smart. They know exactly what they're doing, and they're well-funded. And but I just can't, it's just hard to believe that there could be such a, you know, smart conspiracy around all that, to get so many people to kind of talk in the same voice and express the same doubt. But it gave me new awareness, I think, into the, you know, conspiracy theory thinking that I guess is at work. A dark conspiracy of that.
I agree with you, and frankly, I think there's only one force on this planet that can actually make change happen, and that is the combined efforts of a lot of people, lots and lots and lots of people. There are more people on this planet who do want human civilization to survive than who don't. And thankfully, we have the Internet. We have the power to join together and elect people to office who will get the job done. The job is not insurmountable. We have all the tools we need right now for the next 50 to 100 years to bridge the gap in our energy needs from fossil fuels to clean technology. It's not as if we're, you know, this is 100 years ago. If this were happening 100 years ago, we wouldn't have the tools. We do now. We live in the iPhone age, the iPod age, the iPad age. You know, why are we still using the fuels that George Washington used?
Hmm.
You know, it's time. The time has come for Industrial Revolution version 2.0, and there will be resistance, because there, you know, someone's ox is going to get gored. No pun intended. but you know, does anybody really miss the whaling industry? That was a big, powerful industry. I grew up in a town that was based on whaling on the East Coast. And, you know, nobody really misses the whaling industry anymore. And what killed the whaling industry? Cheap oil that was coming out of the ground. You didn't have to go whaling anymore. Get the oil out of the ground. And it just went away. In a couple of decades, the whole industry collapsed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
These forces are not insurmountable. We just need to midwife the transition. And, you know, since everything in our economy works on the basis of money and price, you know, if you're at a gas, if you need gas, and you've got two gas stations to go to, and one of them has gas that's a nickel cheaper than the other one, which gas station are you going to go into? You'll go out of your way to get the cheaper gas, right? So it's time that we make the free market really free by putting a price on carbon emissions. You can't dump your garbage for free. You have to pay to have it hauled away. You can't flush your toilet for free. You have to pay the water district to take your waste away. Why is it that we can dump CO2 into the atmosphere at no charge? What elements of the free market does that represent? It represents an enormous market failure.
Well,
so
subsidies are very powerful, are they not?
By putting a price on carbon emissions, which is what the Citizens Climate Lobby is pushing for, and that makes fossil fuel more expensive, it'll make renewables more attractive, and people will beat a path towards renewable energy. You then take that money from the carbon tax and give it back to households so that they can still afford their energy. But the people in the economy who plan things like new coal plants or wind farms or whatever, they're going to see that their money, their bread is buttered, their profits will be in the future with renewables, because they will become cheaper. And, you know, that nickel difference is what will make you go out of your way to get the cheaper gas. Well, if you put a rising price on carbon emissions, fossil fuels will instantly, overnight, look less attractive, and renewable clean energy will instantly become more attractive. And here we are in this great economic slump with very high unemployment. The transition to a green economy will bring employment, infrastructure development. It'll stop sending $2 billion a day to Saudi Arabia, where they use it to make bombs that kill American soldiers. You know, a lot of things will start to correct themselves. We won't be worried about going to the Middle East and getting involved in their affairs just to protect our oil supplies.
There's so many good reasons to make this transition to a sustainable energy economy, and yet, so as you say, so many dark, deep-pocketed forces thwarting that. What's it going to take for us, the people, to really push the tipping point in the other direction? Are we getting close, or and it may be the darkest hour is just before the dawn? Because my goodness, with the rhetoric about the tar sands and all the ads on TV right now saying that they're the same in terms of emissions as traditional forms of oil extraction, not true. You said it's at least twice as harmful, and I've heard even higher than that. Clearly, we are going to the farthest reaches of our ability to tap into resources with deep oil drilling, deep water oil drilling with fracking. You had a great video with a great song, What the Frack is Going On. At least that's getting covered. I mean, I think I've seen more on fracking in mainstream newspapers than I have, on another green topic in a long time. So are we getting close to really awakening the mass public to the real true environmental costs that otherwise have been covered over?
Yes, I do think this movement is growing very, very quickly. I mean, look what happened this past summer with the tar sands action. Here I am. I consider myself a well-informed citizen, and I was unaware of the tar sands. Well, now people are aware of the tar sands. It's gotten a huge amount of publicity.
Mm-hmm.
They're aware of the fracking. That's happening quickly. So, you're talking about the rate of change in a society. How quickly can a society pivot? How can we pivot from one way of doing things to another? I don't have the answer for that because we've never lived in an era like this one where we've got the capacity to communicate to so many people so quickly. Word can spread so quickly. People can get organized so quickly. Look what we did. We stopped the pipeline, at least temporarily, for the time being, dead in its tracks. I think that's a huge accomplishment.
It is. I just want to go over a couple of facts.
No one would have predicted that.
I agree, and let's absolutely not overlook any victory where there is. We have to not only acknowledge it, but really amplify it, if nothing else, to give each other hope and encouragement and to inspire others. You talk about how oceans will be rising for the next 1,000 years. Is that what you said, based on what we've already emitted into the atmosphere, and that half the world's population lives within 50 miles of the sea? I just want to make sure I got those somewhat startling facts straight, because you really brought together a lot of different points that together are pretty darn compelling and of course quite stunning. And I think people looked pretty concerned by the time you finished your talk, and this is a group that's studying the environment, but nothing like a great slideshow to really make things real.
Well, as far as the ocean, the rising oceans, this was from the IPCC Fourth Assessment Report, the slide I showed you. And the reasons the oceans are going to continue to rise is that CO2 stays in the atmosphere for a very long time. It doesn't go up and then come down. It goes up and it stays there for centuries. So it will exert its effect for a very, very long time. And it will do so in two ways. The thermal expansion of things getting warmer, the ocean will warm, and that causes the water to expand, just like anything else. It expands when it gets hot. And then you got the melting of the cryosphere, the ice world, in Antarctica, in the north, in all the glaciers around the world, in mountains and whatnot, and these flow into the sea. So the ocean's going to continue to rise for a long time. We've already bought that. Really, we've already bought climate change. The only question now is, are we going to continue with business as usual so that we may be buying a truly catastrophic degree of climate change that will set this planet on a course to a new equilibrium that will be much hotter than anything human civilization has ever dealt with? Or will we quickly come to our senses, make the transition, honor our descendants, value their lives, and for a relatively small amount of money, really, investment in ourselves and our future, make a transition from dirty energy to clean energy? You know, it's really about energy. Mm-hmm. Our society needs a lot of energy. We all love it. And the transitioning doesn't mean doing without. It means doing more with less. I mean, who wouldn't want more efficient appliances and automobiles and whatnot that are clean and don't pollute the air and don't cause wars?
They just have to be priced right.
So, you know,
for America to buy into it.
It's not about freezing in the dark.
You talk about that dangerous amplifying feedback loop as the albedo flip, and to put a light note on it, you said that has nothing to do with your sex drive. It's all about the escalator effect, the tipping points effects, and you know, the melting permafrost, perma meaning permanent, and just all those things that show, you know, we're, as you say, in a death spiral, at least Arctic ice loss in a death spiral. And thank you for being as dramatic, you know, and painting it in the painting the picture as dramatic as it really is, because I think that's what's needed. We just need to have everybody in that audience, not just some, you know, 30 wonderfully committed Marin County residents learning everything they can about our environment and climate. Marin Environmental Forum, I got to give it a plug. It's a great educator. And as I was sitting in the back of the room watching your slideshow and watching people's responses to it, I said, we need to be having these classes in every community across the country now.
Well,
thank you,
I
Peter.
Wish.
thank you, Peter. Thank you for what you're doing, speaking everywhere you can, and if anyone has a chance to check out Peter Joseph's slideshow, he's an emergency room doctor taking a leave of absence to deal with a planetary emergency, and for that I'm very grateful, as are all the people who get to hear him speak. Very compelling. That does it for this edition of The Green Front. We did not play Lawrence O'Donnell's clip, but you can certainly find that. We'll put up a link on thegreenfront.com, where you'll hear the rest of the program as well as on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm going to be in New York visiting the PRN studios this week, later this week, so have a great green one. I'll be traveling, but should be back for another live show on Wednesday.